We're just okay and we play some movies. We're just okay.
Movie watchers.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Just Okay Movies. I'm your host, Biggie Saz, and I'm joined by...
Oh, hey, it's Guido.
Hey, Guido. How you doing, man?
Oh, good. Just got home from work.
Very nice. I just did the same. We're like, let's just go ahead and let's jump straight into it. We have a fun topic to talk about today. I'm very excited. But first, have you watched any films lately?
I just watched Creed 2 yet last night.
Ooh, Creed 2.
Ba-da-da, ba-da-do, Creed 2.
Oh, yo, I'm Sylvester Stallone. I was in Creed. I was also in Rocky. Hey, yo, Adrian.
Hey, we gotta have Michael B. Jordan.
that's the best we could do.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you gotta fight Michael B. Jordan. You gotta fight Drago here.
That's the best I got for Sylvester Stallone. Hey,
that's pretty good. That was very nice. I liked it. Well, what were your thoughts on it?
I thought the first Creed was passable. It was weird, but it was fun enough to see Rocky back at it in more of a trainer position. He had cancer. Michael B. Jordan wanted to fight, and Rocky fought cancer while Michael B. Jordan fought boxers. Kind of a parallel story there. It had weird moments, like the montage, you know, the classic Rocky montage of him, you know, jogging behind a car or something and running up the steps in the gray jumpsuit.
That's iconic.
Yes. In this one, it had Michael B. Jordan like jogging through the hood of Philadelphia. And like people on ATVs, like doing wheelies next to him, and a bunch of kids like jogging next.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it was weird. It was like a fucking DMX music video.
It sounds like it. Is this in the first one or the second one?
This was in the first one.
Oh my God. You see, I would expect something corny like that for the sequel, because that's kind of how Rocky II was. It was a little cornier than the first, but wow, that was actually in the first one.
Yeah. Yeah. And the second one followed suit. Like it had some moments where it was corny and the pace was super slow. There's three fights in it. He fights Ivan Drago twice and he fights the champion. The very first, it opens up with a fight where he wins the world championship. So he's the champion. And then Ivan Drago, actually his son's name is Victor Drago, he sees this as an opportunity and calls him out because, of course, Ivan Drago killed Apollo Creed in a boxing match. So Michael B. Jordan has to accept, of course. But they go through this whole thing of like, I don't know if I'm going to do it. And people are like trying to talk him out of it and shit. And like he talks to Rocky about it. And Rocky's like, hey, I can't be in your corner. And
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that?
Hey, Michael B. Jordan, I can't be in that corner for this fight.
That's like a mix between Sylvester Stallone and Marlon Brando. It's like if they became one person.
Oh, yeah, make you an offer you can't refuse.
But it just drags on. Like, everybody knows he's going to fight him. Like, why drag this out? We all know he's going to fight him. And he fights him. I don't want to give any spoilers. But then there's a long portion of just not a lot happening until eventually him and Rocky kind of go on another training montage. This time it's in the desert, and it's with a bunch of, like, it looks like San Quentin prisoners.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, Michael B. Jordan, we got to get back to basics, okay, Black Panther. And he brings him out to the... He brings him out to the desert, and he gives him a sledgehammer. And then Michael B. Jordan is just fucking hammering the earth.
Oh, God.
You know, for a montage. And getting hit with a medicine ball in the stomach. It was, you know, disappointing as far as montages go. And all the music is hip-hop, like hard hip-hop. Which I get, I understand, but it gets tiresome a little bit. And there's a whole dynamic with his wife, or fiance, I should say. And, yeah, he eventually ends up fighting Ivan Drago again. And, the fight scenes, like any Rocky movie, are fun. It's fun to watch a boxing match and, you know, see these guys fake punch each other and, wonder who's going to win, because in Rocky movies, you never know. Rocky lost a lot of times. So that's cool. But other than that, it was just slow, and I don't know. I just wanted to watch a fight. There were points where I thought about scrubbing ahead to the next fight.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a great point about that. Like, Rocky One was just a fantastic film. And if you've never seen it, go watch it. But at the very end, and it doesn't really matter all that much because it's really looked over, he loses. But everyone was just so enamored that this guy out of nowhere, this know-nothing, took down, or at least fought a full, was it full 15 rounds? Is that the max? I can't remember.
Yeah, 13, and, I think. I don't know.
Oh, is it 13? Yeah, it's around there. I think you're right with 13. With the full match with the champ, and stayed up and kept fighting and wouldn't back down. It was just a great underdog story. And you just love the character. You love the situation he was in. With Adrian and her dad and all that. You love Mickey. He was just a badass that you just wanted to go up and give him a hug and, you know, get right to the side and be like, yeah, go Rocky, get him, kill him. But that's what made Rocky 2, because I felt like Rocky 2 was way slower than the first one, but it had that gravitas. Is like, okay, you've got him, you've got Apollo Creed. Feels like he's his pride's been hurt, even though he won. And they're just like, don't go after him. You know, there's that great scene where he's like in his office and his trainer guy's like, he's like, I've never seen anything like him. He just kept coming. Don't challenge him again. And naturally he does. But it's just, even though it was a little slower in the second one, it still had that great feeling because you still cared about this character. I just didn't see that with Michael B. Jordan's character. See, Adonis Johnson, his character name. I just didn't get that same feeling. And maybe that's not fair since I haven't seen either of them, but I just, it just, the magic wasn't there for me.
He's likable enough. It's just, it's not Rocky, you know?
Right. Did you get a good payoff with, because Dolph Lundgren's in the film? Did Rocky and Dolph Lundgren kind of have a spat or any kind of cool payoff?
At the very last match, they're standing in the ring. So it's like Victor facing off against Adonis. And, right next to each of them is, face to face as, Ivan and Rocky. So that was pretty much it. They didn't even really exchange many words.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a bit of a bummer, because I remember when the first Expendables movie came out, everyone's like, oh my God, it's Rocky and Dolph Lundgren, you know, in the same film. Are they going to like have a little feud or something? And, you know, that's what was so funny about the Expendable films. It was less about the characters in those films and more like the IPs they were a part of beforehand and just getting thrown together, even though they have no relation to each other.
Right.
I bought into the hype. I liked it. But that's one thing I was hoping from this that got me a little interested was any, I guess, prior history between the two kind of coming back into this film.
Yeah, no, not really.
Oh, well, damn it. Well, fuck this movie then. Damn it. That's what I want. Oh, well. Well, yeah, it sounds interesting. I probably need to sit and watch it myself.
They had Victor's mom in it. And if you remember from the one where he fights Ivan Rocky, it was played by Bridget Nelson or Nielsen. Do you remember her?
I don't.
Oh, shock of white hair, like platinum white hair. She just looks like a Russian woman. But she came back.
Oh, yes. Oh, she did.
Yeah, she was in it.
Interesting.
Yeah, looking good for her age. I wonder how old she is. She's got to be up in her, I don't know, 60s?
Close, 55.
Oh, then she doesn't look that good.
Oh. Wow, she's 6'1". Holy crap.
Yeah,
she's
giant woman.
Tall lady. Holy moly. That's impressive. Well, very cool. Very cool. Well, I watched a very interesting film, and I tell you the truth, I would have never watched it if it wasn't for Megan. Megan, I like to lay down and watch like YouTube and stuff when I go to bed. I don't like watching movies because I get too into them. Even if I don't like them, I still get into them for some point. There's some exceptions. And yeah. Megan was like, let's just continue watching this film. We got like 5 minutes into it. She's like, let's keep watching it in bed. I want to see how it finishes. Like, okay. She fell asleep within about 10 minutes. So I was up for the last hour and a half watching it. And I couldn't stop. I was just too invested at that point because it has a really incredible charm to it. And it's called Destination Wedding. It has Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, you need to watch it because you will
love
it.
I need to watch. You think I'll love it?
You will, because it is not what I expected. Completely not what I expected. I thought it was going to be because Keanu Reeves has done the whole love story stuff. And the more like, hell, he's done everything. He's done the sports stuff with The Replacements. And, you know, he's a solid actor. He's not great. He's better in the action stuff than anything else. But this one, I was expecting a lovey-dovey, you know, two people meet at a wedding. They probably hate each other. They go through all the normal stuff and they end up loving each other at the end. And that is basically the plot. But the dialogue is incredible. So the premise is we got these two people going to a wedding in Italy or some shit. They're kind of those picks that you kind of know them. It's more of a courtesy that you're sending them an invite to your wedding. Maybe you just need to fill a couple extra places, whatever. They're not wanted. And the reason is because they're both assholes. They are opinionated. They hate people. At first, they do hate each other because of their views on reality. And that's all they talk about through the whole film is their views on love, marriage, life, working, the human condition. They go on these massive rants between each other and kind of have slightly different views, but they're both assholes. And that's what makes this film so great is the dialogue. And I cannot stress it enough to watch it if you enjoy witty and interesting dialogue. Because as for like actions in the film, there's not much. Mostly them sitting down, walking around the countryside, which is very pretty. And in other small situations like laying in bed, they'll chat about something going on in TV. And then they'll just go into these other topics about people on TV or stuff like that. It's really, really great. And I just could not stop watching this movie till the very end. Check it out. If you love dialogue in films, and it's just the two of them talking, really no one else is in the picture, check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Oh boy. I'll think about it.
I really wish I could say more, but that's really it. And, Keanu Reeves did a good job. Both their characters are neat. They have these weird little idiosyncrasies with each other, and they kind of go into those as well. It really kind of feels like a real story. You know how it's not all, oh no, you fell in the cake. Oh, I fell too. Oh, we love each other now because we're attractive. You know, that's not really how it goes. It's more stuff like this. You know, you may not even care for that person too much. You just start talking to them, but then you start growing.
Is there a scene in the movie? Is there a scene in the movie where they fall in a cake?
No, there is not. I was sort of hoping for one. I know. That's why I'm saying it's not a typical love story.
I want a movie where everyone just falls in a cake all the time. Like, it's bakers. The movie is about a bakery shop, and they have to deliver cakes. And whenever they leave the shop with the cake, someone falls into the cake. That's what I want to see.
I like it. What's a good name for that kind of
movie? Oh, man. Something, it has to be a pun, you'd think, right?
It does. Like, it does.
Take the cake that takes the cake, or I don't know.
Cakewalk.
Ooh, yeah, cakewalk, or something with frosting. What's a frosting kind of pun? I don't know, Jack Frosting.
Ooh, that's not bad. I think you could work with that. You could definitely work with that one. No, I like that too. But yeah, check it out.
Okay.
I was shocked. I actually enjoyed it. It's on all the streaming services for free, as far as I know. Go torrent it if you have to. I don't know if I'd pay for it. I wouldn't really pay for a lot of films I watch, but it's definitely an enjoyable one. But speaking of films, we have a juicy topic to talk about. Very recently, I think it was sometime maybe earlier this week, Steven Spielberg made a very, I don't know if I call it courageous, very bold, I guess, statement. And of course, Steven Spielberg, he's a massive filmmaker. So a lot of people, you know, look to him for guidance on film. You know, he's a big time person. Has made the, I don't know if I'd say declaration, possibly, that he believes streaming films, that is films that are predominantly funded by like Netflix, Amazon, all of those companies, should not be allowed to compete in the Oscars. He's received a lot of backlash. And, you know, I've got to say, my first reaction was the same. I felt like it was not right, not fair. These films should be allowed, but I don't know. The more I think about it and the more I read about it, I'm kind of dipping over to his side. Guido, have any initial thoughts?
Well, there's a loophole for this, and that's just have a small theatrical release for, like Roma did. Roma had a theatrical release. You have to have a theatrical release to be considered for an Oscar. So is he stating that if Netflix makes it for the intent of solely publishing on their streaming service, even if they have the short theatrical release, it shouldn't be eligible? Is that what he's kind of saying?
That's a good point. And I don't know if he's made a declarative, these are the new rules we need to set. At least I have not seen anything like that. For clarification, for anyone who doesn't know, getting into the Oscars, or at least being Oscar eligible, is really not too hard. It's pretty easy. You just need to be in a theater for a week. And it needs to be, I think there's a certain limit. Like, I think it needs to be New York or Los Angeles. I saw something like that. Big city where it's going to probably cost a pretty penny. You can't do it out in the middle of nowhere for like, you know, $200. It's got to be in a big market for at least a week. And I think you also have to send in an application. I think there's a fee involved as well. I could be wrong about that. But the biggest contention is the theater release. Because basically what Netflix is doing is they're going to Sundance or wherever, picking up these films and then just throwing it in the theater for a week, pulling it out, and now they're eligible. And his argument, and the reason why I started turning on this, is he's saying these films should be in the Emmys because they're basically being bought to be put on the streaming service predominantly. And I think that's kind of fair. You know, you don't see Universal releasing a film and then take it out of their theatrical run, or also run it on their service if they even have one. You know, it's predominantly made when Netflix buys it for their streaming service. So I see his point there. But he's also talking about the potential ramifications is all these indie filmmakers are going straight to Netflix and Hulu and Amazon for support and not going to the big companies like Universal or Paramount, because they're only interested in the big money making films, like, you know, the Marvel films and things like that. So smaller indie people are not going to be able to get their films into theaters because it's cost prohibitive. Instead, you're just going to go watch it on Netflix. So I kind of have a, I see what he's saying, but my thing is maybe that's how it should be. I don't know. I'm still a little conflicted on those points.
I think if if I were to make a movie and I poured my heart and soul into it and made a piece of art that is enjoyed by thousands, if not millions, then regardless of how it's distributed, it should probably be considered for any kind of award.
Okay.
Right? I mean, how is it bad for indie film? I don't understand his point. Like, because indie films are going to Netflix, that they shouldn't be in contention for any Oscars? I just don't understand his point. Like, why?
It's a movie. I agree. I think you're right. No, I agree with you. I think that's where I'm a bit... I don't know if flabbergasted is the right word. I'm not sure if he's explaining it very well. It feels almost like it was an off-the-cuff thing, even though he's taken this to the director's board of the Oscars. Apparently, he's the head of. I'm not sure exactly what that board is. I guess maybe they decide the rules of, you know, what, how it's orchestrated.
It sounds to me like it's movie gatekeeping. Like, if you don't get it distributed in theaters by a major... publisher, then you don't belong in the awards.
Right. I totally agree. But
what's the benefit?
If you said, I guess, well, I think it has to do with the awards portion more than anything, because you have the Emmys. And if I'm going to say, is Netflix, if I'm tuning into Netflix, I'm watching TV. I don't say I'm going to the cinema, where that is what the Oscars is technically supposed to be, even if their wording on it is not that cut and dry. But that could be just because Netflix and Hulu and Amazon are all fairly new things, and we're seeing that the Oscars is having to transition with the going trends of watching film, and this may just be part of it. So, you know, if I'm sitting down watching Roma on TV, then that makes sense. This is a kind of a TV movie per se. It should get an Emmy and not be an Oscar. Whereas I think he may be feeling like Netflix is kind of, oh, what's the word? Dipping, getting a benefit out of both, in that we're just going to throw it in the cinema for a week. Who cares if it makes any money? It's only a week. And then they're going to pull out and get another award. Whereas someone else who's gone to, you know, Universal has way more at stake, where Netflix has already made their money off of the subscriptions. It doesn't matter. So I can maybe see it in that way, that maybe Netflix is playing the system just a bit.
Yeah, maybe. There's a whole back end for the Oscars and for Netflix in particular, where they use it as marketing. And but a lot of, they all use it as marketing. Like if Universal or Paramount or Warner Brothers, if they win a Best Picture, that is good for them. So I don't understand why it can be good for them, but not good for Netflix. I guess I just don't understand the argument. Like, isn't more competition better?
Yes, I agree. I think it just, it comes down to, are you very heavy into the film going experience, that you feel like any film that's going to be for an Oscar should focus solely on the cinematic release only, and those should be considered? Or should we have this hybrid? I mean, if you're making something for Netflix, it is kind of like making a made-for-TV film, but does that matter anymore? You know, should it? Should there not be a line between the two?
No, I think it's the times have changed, and we all the way we consume our media shouldn't affect the quality, the judgment of the quality of the media that we're consuming.
See, I want to side with that. There's just something holding me back. I'm not sure what it is yet. I agree. You know, a film is good, whether if it shows on the big screen or you just, you know, download it off of YouTube. If it's a good film, it's a good film. But looking at just what the Oscars itself is, should it just be a straight vanilla? It's a film, whether if it was on Netflix or in the cinema, doesn't matter. As long as it's a film, it's in contention. And maybe that would make the Oscars too messy, because I mean, you're just opening up a smorgasbord of potential candidates. Or should it be a category? You know, best film in cinema, best film on other platforms, and then overall best film, you know, branch it out. Then it becomes a little too messy. Well, which one's really the best one? It just adds more categories to the mix. Maybe that's more of a good middle ground if you're not going to consider Netflix as being solely TV only. I don't know. It is an interesting dilemma, and I can see why, you know, seems like Spielberg really, really cared for the cinema. And I think we all care for it too.
Yeah.
But it's more of an, I feel like it's more of an economics thing. You know, it is easier just to sit at home, watch TV. It's way easier to get these films off the internet now, and, you know, from iTunes or wherever, than it ever used to be. And just going to the cinema for a film that's, you know, maybe not going to use that kind of oomph that the cinema has, you know, the nice wattage speakers and the big screen. It's just not worth it because the cost is going up. There's just so many factors that we have to deal with. And I don't feel like it's just a vanilla Netflix is coming in. We can't allow those films to be in the same category as cinema films. Well, it's because no one's wanting to go see them in the cinema. So we have basically just a bunch of Avengers films and stuff that are going to be the only ones that will, you know, make the bulk up. I don't know. I think it's a bigger argument than Spielberg is making it out to be, in my opinion. But I think I'm leaning towards everyone else, and I'm leaning on your side, Guido, that ultimately these are movies, and some of those Netflix ones are way better than some of the ones we saw. I mean, I thought Roma was way better than The Favorite, you know, so just because The Favorite was only in theaters, that one should be considered a better film than Roma. I'm not sure about that.
I guarantee The Favorite didn't have a super wide release either.
Exactly. You know, I've heard someone mention, I can't remember if it was on Screen Rant or one of the other sites, that they would extend it to 4 weeks instead of just 1 week. But that just seems like a Band-Aid. Does it really matter to Netflix? If they want it enough, they'll just do it another 3 weeks. Apparently, Roma actually played for 3 weeks. I mean, whether or not if it was profitable or anything, I mean, who knows? It may have just been an expense on their P&L. Who knows? But I'm kind of leaning towards what everyone else is saying, that if we're just talking about quality of the films, I don't see a difference. If we're wanting to say we want to separate cinema-centric films, whatever, however you want to categorize that, from other sources, then, you know, maybe we need to come up with a category or a whole different award ceremony. Who knows?
Yeah.
But that already feels like a mess.
I'm curious how, like, if we're comparing it, how many theaters Roma released into as opposed to any of the other ones. I know Bohemian Rhapsody and Black Panther and stuff was widely released, but some of the other movies, like the Favorite, had to be very small theatrical release.
Absolutely. There's no way that could play in every theater. There wouldn't be enough people to go and see a film like that. And that's nothing new, but I'm not sure. I'm still a little torn by it. One comment, at least it's the one thing that he said that really stuck with me. I'll go ahead and read the quote. Let's see. I can't remember who he said it to. It may have been to Screen Rant, but the quote is, fewer and fewer filmmakers are going to struggle struggle to raise money or to go over to compete in Sundance and possibly get one of the specialty labels to release their films theatrically, publicly. And more of them are going to let the SVODs, which would be Netflix and Hulu and them, businesses finance their films, maybe with the promise of slight one-week theatrical windows to qualify them for awards as a movie. And that just feels like, that's the end of the quote, it just feels like that's more of a, he doesn't want these films to just go to Netflix. He wants them to have a real theatrical release. But on the flip side, Steven Spielberg doesn't have to worry about that. He can put any film that he wants in there, but this is probably a good deal for smaller filmmakers that they have someone like Netflix that's going to get their film out, because they would probably not be able to do a big release even if they got Universal or someone to get them in there, let alone do all the publicity and money pushing to get it into the Oscars.
In a way, it almost sounds like the typical I did it this way 30, 40 years ago, so they should have to do it that way too. These stupid millennials are ruining the movie industry.
That's right. You're totally right. And I think that's why everyone's had the initial knee-jerk reaction that he's wrong. Get with the times, Grandpa. I mean, the picture I have, I was reading this article off of Ars Technica. They tweaked the picture. It's that old meme one of the old man yells at cloud from The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. They tweaked it to make it look like Steven Spielberg. And that's what it feels like. Because 40 years ago, he didn't have high-speed internet. He didn't have internet, really. You couldn't upload this stuff to YouTube or Netflix or Amazon easily and distribute it to people in a very efficient, economical way. You're doing film reels. That's expensive. That's manual. But the times are different. And also, maybe not his company. I mean, I haven't seen... he does some producing, but it's mostly big films. A lot of the big boys don't want to fund a small film because they usually don't make any money.
I don't know, man. Give me a streaming service. It lets me watch movies that I wouldn't see in the theaters anyway.
Exactly. My biggest thing is cost. You know, as a consumer of film, I agree with them going through the Netflix route because honestly, I'd say all the films we watched, except for Black Panther, I would not have paid to go see. I would not have because of the cost. It's too expensive. You're talking at least $15 to get your ass in the seat. And I'm just not interested, you know? Not that I can't pay for it. I just don't want to do it. It's a time commitment. And I, you know, a lot of the films we watched, I watched on, you know, Netflix or whatever, like Roma, I kind of cut it in half, you know? Stopped it, kind of did something else, came back and watched it. Not necessarily it's because the film's bad. It's just because I like having that freedom. And I wouldn't have sat down for 2 hours and watched the whole film.
I think just people, the population in general has come down to budgeting which movies they want to see in theaters. Like Captain Marvel comes out this weekend. I'm going to fucking see that in the theater. But if it was any fucking indie darling, and I watched a lot of indie movies last year, I don't think I saw any of them in the theater because it's a gamble.
Right. And there's really no benefit. You know, you're not getting anything out of this. And you might, I'm not going to label as all of them, but majority of them, you're not going to get any benefit other than just being in a nice dark room and having a big picture. You know, Star Wars, you're going to get that beautiful sound. Same way with Captain Marvel, that nice IMAX screen, the sound, but you're not going to get that out of The Favorite or Green Book.
There's three genres I would say that are much better in the cinema and for me. And those are action movies, whether it be sci-fi or superhero, whatever. Comedies and horror movies. Like all those are ones that I would prefer to watch with an audience. It elevates the film.
It does. Cause it uses a lot of that stuff to its advantage. A nice picture, great sound. You know, having two people sit in a coffee shop talking about, you know, having sex with strangers, that's not really gonna help your you know, your film grow with a, you know, a 10,000 watt speaker and a massive ass screen. It's not going to enhance that cinematic experience. And so, you know, I think I'm still kind of open to go either way, depending on the basis. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon have all been, I think, great blessings to the film industry in that it's gotten some smaller voices out there for projects that probably would not have either seen the light of day or would have been so obscure we would have never heard of them.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for that. I'll throw YouTube in there as well. You know, there's great content on YouTube. And it's not just movies, but TV as well. All that's great. It's become very economical to make good quality content. And I don't know if looking at the Oscars as being the premier film award of the industry still, it's just an industry award show, not meaning this is the best film of all time. It's just what a bunch of people thought was a really good movie that are in the industry. I think it is kind of a shame to leave those films out just because they weren't in the cinema. Well, hey, if you want to share your thoughts on this subject, very interested. Everyone's talking about it, and I want to hear your thoughts. Shoot us an email to justokmovies@gmail.com. Also, feel free to tweet us at justokmovies. And we want to hear what you got thoughts on. If not this, then any other film topic you want to talk about, or give us some feedback. Got some good feedback by a guy on Twitter. He mentioned that I should have IMDb up and running so that way I'm not like that guy or the black guy or the white guy. I agree. And I did it this time. It was very helpful. So thank you so much for that comment. Greatly appreciate it.
Now you gotta get so good that you pull it from memory.
Oh, impossible. I think you've known me long enough now that my memory is god awful. It's so bad. I can't remember anything. But hey, thank you guys so much for listening. Guido, as always, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, no problem, man. I enjoy this. This is a blast. We will be back next week. Take care, guys.
Bye.